keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to the show. I'm definitely glad to be back. Monday, we had a great show, and had an awesome musician on, and an artist and poet that we had met in Houston when me, Claire and I were out there. And, you know, it was really refreshing to have a little bit of a artistic flair thrown into the mix. And we're going to try to do a little bit more of that at least once a month, hopefully every week, and, you know, have different artists on, and have a little break in the middle of the show so that we can kind of take a little break from talking about all this really intense geopolitical and domestic police state and, you know, drug war and all this stuff, that horrible things going on all around the world and all around the country, you know, and kind of take a break from that and mix it up with a little bit of cultural stuff. And, you know, hopefully that's something that you guys are into. We've been getting some good feedback on it, and so we're pretty happy about all that. Anyway, let's get right into the show here, because we got so many things to cover tonight. We aren't going to be taking any calls because we've got so many topics to go over, and I've got a bunch of notes here on stuff that we're going to talk about. First off, make sure you catch us Monday through Friday here on UCY, or if you're on the Anti-Media tab on the radio tab on the antimedia.org, you can catch us Monday through Friday, same place, same time, at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. We do take callers most of the time. Tonight we're not, just because we got so much stuff to go over. But if you miss any of our shows, you can catch them on YouTube as well. If you go on UCY TV's YouTube channel, you can find all of our shows there. You can listen to them in the morning if you can't stay up late. If you're on the East Coast, if you're somewhere around the world where the time just doesn't match up, I know it's kind of hard to stay up late like that, but, you know, you can catch us later on tomorrow, listen to us on your way to work, fighting the traffic, either way. Anyway, first off, let's introduce the panel here. I got Claire Bernish with us here in the studio. What's up, Claire?
Not much. Kind of a crazy day.
I agree. Really crazy day in the news world, and it was just kind of a whirlwind. And with all this stuff going on, the shooting in San Bernardino, which we're going to talk about first, because that's just something that's obviously a hectic situation. We're joined by DB Schwartz, our longtime co-host. What's up, DB?
Not much, man. Just kind of getting sick of this shit.
Yeah, join the club. No, I'm just kidding. we got Jake Anderson, a journalist with the Anti-Media, who actually covered the shooting today. What's up, Jake?
Not much. I, too, am sick of this shit. Yeah, it's disturbing. I'm assuming we're going to get into it a little bit. But on the whole, I'm good. Trying to stay positive, you know. I think that's important in all of this. Try to maintain some, you know, inner peace. Don't let them take your inner peace, man. Anywho, how are you, Nick?
Oh, I'm doing really well, and I'm glad you brought up the positivity thing, because there is a really great event going on throughout the whole holiday season called OpSafe Winter. It's a hashtag. It was initially started by the anonymous group, the hacktivists that have been making news recently for going after ISIS, and they've done all kinds of things in the past, controversial and good and, you know, sometimes bad. But this event called OpSafe Winter, it's a national, and in fact it's an international event. And you can find it by searching OpSafe Winter using the hashtag and then typing in your city. You'll find it either on Facebook or just searching on the internet. And what it is people all around the world coming together to try to help out people that are less fortunate, whether it's just helping feed people that are hungry or getting clothing to people that are living on the streets and helping them stay warm. That's the main thing, you know, staying warm and safe throughout the winter time. So that's a great event to get out there and like do something good in your community Claire wants to talk a little bit about it.
I'd like to say that with OpSafe Winter, for people that are houseless or people that are in need, particularly socks, shoes, blankets, scarves, those kind of things are desperately needed. So
sleeping bags,
sleeping
backpacks,
bag, anything warm that you can think of. It gets awfully cold very quickly when you're living without a house.
Yep, it really does. Even when you have a house, it still gets cold. So think about people living on the streets. You know, it's not a good situation for a lot of people.
And something they're doing up here, because our state is absolutely the most generous, is they're taking public funds and building big, brand new buildings that are homeless shelters and outreach programs up here. You know, where I live in Eagan, they're building a huge thing next to a community center, because you literally will not survive a winter being homeless up here. And it's a good example, man. It's not taking a lot of money. It's taking a lot more money to fix people's problems later if they break down and they become mentally ill, and then they go in and out of the services system. It's better to just get them back up on their feet.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, dealing with their health issues, you know, incarcerating them, that's more costly than helping people find a place to stay, a place where they can clean up and actually get dressed and go out and eventually find a job or, you know, get help for the issues they're having. I mean, in the long run, it's a much better investment to help people than it is to just let them be victimized by the system. We're also joined by our special guest, Manny Aguilar. What's up, Manny?
What's up? How you doing? Yeah, stuff going on. That San Bernardino, yeah, it affects me just like anything else. But at the same time, I kind of, you know, sometimes I think stuff like that needs to happen, because people that I've been telling them about all these killings around the world, they didn't care, but now people I've been talking to in Riverside, they care now because it's not close to home. Why does it have to be close to home for you to start caring, and all of a sudden it's all over the media? Even when you don't want to hear about it, you hear about it, you know? And that's kind of a very sad thing to feel like that, you know? So I just want to throw that out, because, I mean, I'm not trying to say I don't feel sorry for them, but I'm just, you know, to the point is, oh, okay, it's almost like the France thing. Everybody go, France this, and it just, you know, it's crazy like that. But also, I want to say, you know, for tomorrow, happy birthday to the Russell brother, Nick Burnaby, and Spanish Feliz Cumpleaños a Nicolás Carnavas.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm turning 29 tonight at midnight. Unfortunately, I wish I was turning 19 again, but no, I'm turning 29. Yeah, Manny, that's a great point, man. It really is. You know, once again, it's a selective outrage. You know, it's a huge problem when, you know, when 14 people are gunned down here at you know, in Riverside, which is pretty close to where our anti-media headquarters is located. But, you know, when we bombed that Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan, that was full of a bunch of innocent people and doctors and nurses and, you know, even kids and stuff like that. Over 20 people died, and it's like, okay, yeah, no big deal. You know, it's in Afghanistan. The people look different than us. They speak a different language. Ah, who cares? You know, and all of a sudden, you know, when the media creates a narrative in France, for instance, it's like, oh my God, the world must stand with France and we must back them. And then a week later, no, actually just a day later, France is dropping bombs over in Syria indiscriminately, and they're killing a bunch of civilians, and no one gives a shit. It's like, oh, who cares? You know, it's like the media told us to care about this, so that's what we're going to care about, you know, and it's pretty sad. So, you know, we definitely got to combat that selective outrage, if you know what I mean. But that being said, we're definitely going to be inundated with a narrative that's going to be coming out following the shooting in San Bernardino. So we have to be prepared to combat that. It may be somewhat of a pointless battle here because it seems like unfortunately, fear is prevailing at this point in time, and it's pretty bad and it's pretty scary, you know. And this is just something that's going to happen. I mean, even after the France thing, you've seen a huge uptick in Islamophobia, xenophobia. You've seen a huge increase in support for intervention in the Middle East. In fact, you know, we're going to get into this later, but the UK, which was just last year, was hugely against intervention in Syria. Now they voted to be in favor of it just today. And so, you know, we're going to see a bunch of this reactionary stuff coming out of San Bernardino. And that's what I want to talk about first. So first I want to go to Jake just to give us a quick rundown of what went on. What do we know so far as what's going on over there?
Yeah,
go ahead. Manny, go ahead.
I just want to personally send some blessings out there your way from Hollywood down here all the way to Chula Vista. To that family, they lost those two young daughters in a car accident like that, you know. So I want to really make it official that I'm sending blessings all the way from Hollywood. It's just it's such a tragedy, such a young, two young lives taken like that. So.
Yeah, man, it really is. Yeah, two girls died just down the street from us here on the freeway in a car accident. Pretty horrific. Taken way too young. They were only like, some of them were, I think one of them was like only like 20. Really sad situation. but Jake, what do we know so far about what's going on in San Bernardino?
Well, we don't know anything. And I mean, we know facts that the Fourth Estate establishment is parsing through the media. You know, they're pushing through a narrative, of course. What I think can't be denied is, people have been killed. People have been shot. We don't know who by. We know that there were... likely three shooters, and it looks as though two of them have been killed, and they're still looking for the third. We know that there have been 14 fatalities so far, and last I checked, 16 injuries, so the fatality count could go higher. Hopefully it won't. The shooters fled in a black SUV. They were heavily armed with military armor and assault rifles, and immediately the FBI and ATF were investigating the scene, of course. Two eyewitnesses described loved ones locking themselves in their offices after hearing shots and seeing bodies on the floor. Important to note that this occurred at a building that it was the Inland Regional Center, which is a nonprofit group that coordinates services for children with developmental disabilities. And there's also a K-8 school in the area. So, it's hard to know what the target could have been at this point. I think, if it's terrorism, the idea is to incite terror. And, of course, we're now part of a kind of Orwellian nonstop plot right now to instill fear, and where this fear is coming from, whether you believe it's terrorists, terrorist agents, a hybrid of terrorist agents with CIA black op agents. Don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole. I won't, except to note that the Free Thought Project put out an interesting story today about how yet again there was a police drill going on right before the shooting in the exact same area. And that's a characteristic that's been prevalent on virtually every domestic shooting or terrorist attack since 9/11. So I guess at this point we need to do some investigation. We need to contact some law authorities and really see how often – How frequent are these police drills, military drills? Why do they always seem to occur on the day of these attacks? At the very least, can these drills not help stop these things? at the worst, we go down the rabbit hole. But the facts of the case are this: people were killed. It's terrible. It's going to be used as a narrative to incite further, if it's If it was Muslims, any one of a Muslim denomination that did it, even if it's ISIS, which in my opinion is not even Islamic, it's a different kind of thing altogether. This will be used to launch us into some kind of retaliatory event. I don't think Obama's said anything yet about what he's going to do, because we still don't know who did it. We don't know who did it, and that's what we're waiting for. But again, it's so hard to report on this stuff, Nick, because I just don't trust, and of course, this is why I'm part of the anti-media. I just don't trust the media, the mainstream media. They are an apparatus, a voice box of the state at this point, and so anything coming from them is what the state wants us to hear. Right now, they just want us to be scared. So be scared. That's what you should take from this story and this day. Be scared, because
exactly.
14 people were killed, hundreds, possibly thousands more were also killed today in other countries. But hey, we don't need to think about that, right? You know?
Exactly. And I know Manny's like about 60 miles west or so of where this went down. And I'm sure he's like cowering in fear right now in his where he lives and afraid to go outside.
It's so scary. A black SUV could roll by any second. It's like, dude, you have like a 1 in 6 trillion chance that a black SUV could roll up and kill you right now, Manny.
You know, and
yeah, I'm now sorry. I shouldn't be so glib with this. It's really a tragedy. What happened? It is, but it's getting to the point now where people with rational minds have to start really kind of putting the pieces together here. What the hell is going on? There have been more domestic terrorist attacks than days this year.
What I've told some people, because you know everybody's clamoring now for control of firearms. Let's try it, and then if we don't like it, see if they'll let us get our guns back.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll work out well. Jake, I'm just a quick reference here to what you were saying regarding ISIS and whether they're Islamic or not. That'd kind of be like calling the Nazis a Christian organization, because they kind of had the backing in one way or another of the Catholic Church, which is completely not true. You know, we know true Christianity has a much different outlook on the way the world should be, not what the Nazis interpreted it as. In the same way as ISIS may take the, you know, the Quran and reinterpret it and skew it to fit their own, you know, agenda and their own conquest and their own things. And we all know ISIS started off as a proxy army and all that. We're going to get into that later too. But first I want to talk about, because you make a great point there regarding the whole drill, you know, the mass shooter drill going on. And I've seen so many people already jumping to the false flag conclusion. It's like, dude, you can't sit there and say, hey, it's the same day something happened, and sit there and
right.
claim a false flag, because there's no evidence out
there. You don't
there.
Have evidence yet, dude, so these people need to shut the hell up. They're damaging the pursuit of intellectual thought here. We need a nuanced, cool-headed assessment of this stuff. It you're right. I think it's absolutely absurd for the words false flag to even come up right now is just stupid. We don't have any evidence. But that said, this pattern is becoming to the point of it's really stretching the word the meaning of the word coincidence at this point. I mean, if you look back at and I mean every single one, the London bombings, the Madrid bombings, all to a point, every single domestic one, Sandy Hook, Boston Marathon, Aurora, all of them, every single one, there were military or police drills that occurred on the same day in the same vicinity. I mean, look, I really don't want to go there. I do not want to go there, but it's getting hard to overlook it at this point. It really is.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not hard to do, man. I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. It's a well-known art form for the ruling elite, if you want to call them. Right.
Yeah.
It's a good time to just stay open-minded with what's going on,
right,
and continue to question anything coming out. Now, to me, the more important aspect here is not, you know, what exactly happened there. as far as who's behind it, or you know, if there is any shady dealings here, or whether you know what we're being told is actually legit and that's actually what happened. The main thing, and same exact instance with the France, the recent France, you know, terror attacks, and of course back to 9/11. We're still feeling the repercussions of 9/11 here in the United States with mass surveillance, and we recently covered an article about how the NSA is stopping mass surveillance, but they're actually not. They passed the sections of the Patriot Act that were expiring or were ruled unconstitutional. They were ruled illegal, and by the way, no one's going to be held accountable for that. The government did a bunch of illegal shit by spying on us. No one's going to go to jail for it. They replaced all that with the USA Freedom Act, which is another doublespeak type of bill that was recently passed that is just transferring the NSA spying from the NSA over to big data. And then now big data just sits there, collects all of your metadata, and then the NSA just petitions them whenever they want it. They just say, hey, we need all this guy's communications, just send it over. We don't got to do the work anymore. We don't got to break the law. Now it's up to you guys. And since you're helping us out, you know, you scratch our back, we scratch yours, you guys also get immunity so that nobody can sue you for spying on them. And that's exactly what's going on. And, you know, this is exactly the kind of thing that the repercussions that we're feeling from 9/11. And so in the wake of this shooting in San Bernardino that went on today, now the latest reports that I've seen, they're identifying what, of course, this isn't set in stone yet, but there's a guy named Saeed Farouk. That is supposedly the guy that was gunned down by the cops, that it was one of the three shooters. And according to some reports I read, they're suggesting that one of the other shooters was possibly his brother. And of course, this guy has an Arab-sounding name. There's a very good chance that it's going to come out that he was a Muslim. And so we can already kind of see the narrative that's going to come out from that, because even following the France attacks, we've seen a major uptick in Islamophobia here in the United States, even though Americans hate the French people. We can't stand France. Because the media kind of made that narrative that, hey, we all got to stand with France, we've seen this huge uptick in Islamophobia, even though a huge majority of Muslims are completely peaceful and just want to mind their own business and do their own thing and are not violent or not terrorists. People across the spectrum, left and right, including, Bill Maher, and of course, everyone that supports Trump, they're so quick to just condemn an entire religion. And we've seen an uptick of Islamophobia. We've seen attacks going on in France against Muslims. Here in the United States, I read a couple stories last week about there was some a guy from Ethiopia. He was actually an Ethiopian Christian guy that ended up getting attacked. He was an Uber driver. He ended up getting attacked by some guy because he thought he was Muslim. And so if it turns out, because we're going to see one of two narratives here, and we're going to talk about both of them. If it turns out that these shooters were, they turn out to be Islamic extremists, and especially if ISIS ends up taking credit for this attack, we're going to see this huge uptick in Islamophobia, xenophobia, and what's even more, geopolitically speaking, even more important is we're going to see a huge uptick in support for intervention in Syria and Iraq when it comes to ISIS, if ISIS does indeed take, you know, credit for this attack. We're going to see the American people and the media and all the politicians literally are going to start calling for a ground invasion of Syria. And it was just it was either, I think it might have been over the weekend, but, you know, Lindsey Graham and John McCain already said that we need 20,000 troops to go invade Syria, you know, and those kind of calls to action are going to now be echoed by a bunch of people in the GOP, and even the war hawks on the left, including Hillary Clinton, are going to be kind of in the wake of this attack. As I said, if ISIS does take credit for it, this is the kind of talk that we're going to hear, you know, and we're going to get into this later, but it's that very same intervention that causes groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS to even exist, you know what I mean? And so this problem reaction solution that we're going to start seeing, if these shooters ended up being Muslim Islamic extremists, is basically the exact opposite of what we should be doing. We should be pulling our people out of places like Iraq and Syria and all these countries, because that's what causes the extremists. In fact, there was an article out today on Washington Post which talked about how a lot of people in Iraq basically believe that that the U.S. and the West are in cahoots with ISIS, which may not be so far-fetched. I mean, the Washington Post article very much tried to make it sound like an extreme idea, and it's, oh, this is ridiculous that the Iraqis believe this, but there's a lot of the Iraqi public, and also in Syria, 80% of the Syrian public believe that the West created ISIS, and whether we talk about it being an inadvertent side effect of U.S. policies, U.S. intervention by overthrowing Saddam Hussein, creating a power vacuum in which ISIS filled, or whether we want to talk about it being a direct, you know, CIA creation in order to try to overthrow Assad, I don't know exactly what's going on over there, but the people in Iraq and the people in Syria believe that, you know, and so all this talk now with Obama recently announcing that they're going to send troops back into Iraq to go help fight ISIS, you know, the people there are not welcoming. We're not being greeted as liberators, as was famously quoted by George Bush. That's
weren't they supposed to greet us with like pies and flowers and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. And in fact, the Iraqi prime minister made a statement that came out today or yesterday that said, hey, look, the U.S. troops are not welcome here. And all of the militias, the militias that are actually fighting ISIS, the Iraqi militias, because the Iraqi military is pretty much was manufactured. The Iraqi military fell completely apart when ISIS started fighting them. The Iraqi military is basically useless. The people that are doing the fighting in Iraq right now are these militias, many of them backed by Iran, and many of them are just kind of Shia militias that have been operating there, and they're the only ones keeping ISIS in check. They've also released statements saying, we do not want the U.S.'s help on the ground. We do not want your help. We don't want your troops. And so any of this talk about, hey, you know, after this shooting in San Bernardino, let's go send a bunch of troops over there. The Iraqi people don't want that. It's going to create even more of a backlash, and it's going to create more of a problem and more blowback, more refugees. Terrorist attacks, and more refugees, obviously. So, you know, all this stuff that we have to keep in mind. Now, the other thing that is really, really frightening about the repercussions of this attack, again, if it turns out to be Muslim extremists, is maybe a repeat of what we saw post 9/11 and what we just saw post France, you know, after the Paris attacks, is a major clampdown on civil liberties. Basically, France is dealing with 3 months of pseudo martial law. They're in a state of emergency. The news came out just a couple of days ago about how they're putting activists on house arrest in France. And a lot of these guys, like Greenpeace activists, they're literally Greenpeace are like some of the most peaceful people in the world. It's like peace is in their name. And they're putting Greenpeace activists on house arrest because they say that they're violent and that they can cause disruptions. And this is what France is doing in retaliation of the terror attacks in Paris. This is the same kind of thing that could easily go on in the United States as well. So we got to be very wary about all that stuff. Now,
martial law is coming, man.
I hope not, but you know, with enough fear going on,
all it takes is something bigger than this, and it's game over.
Yeah, exactly. With enough fear, you know, they can really create the atmosphere for people to kind of accept anything. I mean, we already see a bunch of people, all the people that support Trump, they're so afraid of their own shadows that they're willing to kind of surveil every single Muslim in the country, even if they're U.S. citizens. I mean, you can't even make this stuff up. People are that afraid. So another terror attack going on could cause even more of this stuff.
This is the same idea of where the Japanese internment camps came from. It looks like it's shaping up to be the same thing. I mean, we've already stepped up with surveillance and, you know, the clampdown on liberties after 9/11, and it's not like any of those clampdowns were ever really released. And now we are looking at even more. So it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
It really looks so similar. I mean, let's hope it doesn't get that bad. But like I said, and I hate to be a harbinger of doom, but if there's another major terrorist attack by an extremist jihadist group, I mean, I think we should all expect for internment camps for Muslim American citizens. You know, are we never going to learn from history? I think we're just mutants. We're just doomed mutants if we can't learn from our own history like that.
And it's an exceptionally dangerous slippery slope because, you know, you can say with World War II, at least with the internment camp, they particularly chose a specific nationality of people because they considered them threats. With this, anybody, this is just the beginning. I mean, if they're going to create a religious reason to put somebody in jail, it'll be anything that they don't want.
Yeah,
exactly, man. And that's so frightening. And you know, France is already kind of moving in that direction, putting fools on house arrest just because no warrant, no trial, no suspicion. Just, hey, we think you should be on house arrest. In fact, our site, we were checking our site because we found out that we were being restricted temporarily in Turkey because we were posting stuff that was critical of the regime. We were checking on sites that you can see where your website is blocked, and we found out we were being blocked in Paris. And so, you know, not only is Paris clamping down on activism, they're clamping down on free speech like crazy.
And
it's pretty ironic considering, you know, the Hebdo, you know, the Charlie Hebdo shootings, and everyone's like, oh, they were trying to go against free speech, so let's go ahead and retaliate by clamping down on free speech. And that it's so Orwellian the way that these guys go about this stuff. France is a textbook kind of example of the way the West can very quickly turn fascist. And keep in mind, their president is a self-proclaimed socialist. I mean, socialism is supposedly against imperialism and against fascism and you know, in favor of rights. Well, dude, we got to keep in mind that all these different governing structures are just oligarchy under a different name. Whether you're a socialist or a capitalist or whatever you want to call it, it really just comes down to oligarchy, you know what I mean? And so France is kind of just showing that. And now here's the other narrative here that we definitely want to talk about tonight. If it turns out that these initial reports claiming that the guy may be a Muslim come out to be false, and that these shooters end up being Christian extremists or white people or whatever, then we're going to have the media narrative that's going to be all about gun control and how we got to, you know, give up our gun rights to stop these mass shootings. Obama, in fact, was already tweeting it during the shooting before the thing even ended. Both Obama and Hillary Clinton were already tweeting out regarding gun control and how, oh, this just goes to show how much more we need gun control and that kind of thing. You know, and so that's a whole nother debate. I want to bring everybody back into this conversation. First, I want to go to Manny because I haven't heard you talk much about gun control, and I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I personally, I've always said that I kind of want the gun control to come into effect because then we'll be in the same thing as what happened in Mexico. The people said, okay, we'll turn in our weapons. Well, guess what? A private citizen can't have weapons anymore, stuff like that. And that's the reason, you know, we have to fight with different weapons down there right now with the police clashing with all the stuff that's happening in Mexico and all that, you know, the 43 and everything else, you know. So, I mean, I tell people, don't give up your weapons, period. I might not choose to carry a weapon right now, but I want the freedom to be able to say, maybe I change my mind next week, you know, stuff like that. So, and just, you know, and then there's so much hate out there, you don't know who you need to protect yourself from and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, I was just at San Diego State last month, as you know, Nick, you know, protesting and being down there with our Muslim brothers and sisters, you know, because of that young lady that was attacked at San Diego State just for being Muslim, you know. So, I mean, it's just a dangerous world out there. I would not give up my weapons at all, you know.
Yeah, man, great point. I mean, in many countries that have instilled gun control, Mexico is a great example. It didn't really solve any of the problems, and once again, the criminals are still walking around with guns. The cartels are some of the most heavily armed organizations in the world, and they're illegal, but they get their guns, and they have them, and they use them to put the citizens in check. And, you know, as well as the corrupt government there in Mexico kind of takes advantage of that, and they're able to get away with a lot more, you know, a lot more crimes against their people and more repression because they know that people aren't armed. There are some groups in Mexico that have picked up arms. In fact, there was one story I saw where there were hundreds of women in one community that picked up arms against the cartels and against the government and kicked them both out. So that's a pretty encouraging sign. And I come from a school of thought that definitely respects the right to bear arms. But at the same time, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are kind of in favor of gun control. And so I don't know, man. Jake, what do you think about this?
Well, I think the whole debate, I've gone back and forth over it over the years. I don't have a clear position right now, I'll be honest. But what I do think is that gun control and the debate around it is one of the great divisive distractions of our age. And here's why I say that. On one side, I used to be a gun control advocate, and part of me still is, because I do think within the artifice of saying government can regulate things. We regulate cars. We regulate the age in which we can drive a car. If an 80-year-old's driving around crashing into people, we take the car away. So too do I think there is room to say that someone is not responsible enough to own and wield a firearm. However, I don't think gun control would really help that much. I don't think it would reduce mass shootings. People are going to get their weapons. That's all there is to it. On the other side, you can stuff an assault rifle down your pant leg all you want. It's not going to protect you from a militarized police force. So both sides of the argument miss the point, and they're distracting us from more rational and progressive ways of organizing and addressing the major issues at hand, which is that there is a corporate takeover, the government is subsidizing it, and that's where we need to be focusing our attentions.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I mean, there was a great quote, I think it was from Ron Paul a couple years ago, that said, hey, if you want to talk about gun control, great, let's take all the guns away from the federal government first. You know what I mean?
I would agree with that. It's never going to happen, but yeah, that'd be great. I mean, if we just burned all the guns, Fahrenheit, you know, Fahrenheit, whatever.
You know, and I guess the right to bear arms, the bearing arms argument, kind of, it can escalate all the way up to the very top when we talk about nuclear weapons, you know, and when it comes down to it, I am a huge proponent of nuclear non-proliferation. You know, I think nuclear weapons need to be done away with altogether, you know, but if some countries are restricted from having nuclear weapons, but others aren't, you know, which is the exact case we're seeing right now with Iran and that whole nuclear deal debate and all that stuff. It's like the U.S. somehow has this moral authority where it's like we get to tell people who and who can't have nuclear weapons. We turn the other way when Israel has them and all of their weapons are illegal. They're not even supposed to have them. Officially, they haven't even acknowledged that they own them, but it's well known that they have at least 80 nuclear warheads in their possession. We turn the other way when it comes to that, but when it comes to Iran, it's like, oh my God, we can't let them have nuclear arms. We'll do anything to stop them. You know what I mean? But at the same time, how does the U.S. have that moral high ground when we're the only country to ever use them offensively against another country? I mean, that's insane. But again, it's one of those things where we can't get rid of nuclear weapons unless every country and every single one that exists is done away with. You know, we can't say, oh, every country in the world can't have nuclear weapons except for the U.S. This country and that country. Then those countries have outsized power over others. And I think that we can scale it back down to the whole gun control debate where it's like, look, we can't take the guns away from one group of people and then leave them in the hands of the other group of people. If we're going to control guns, everybody has to give them up, including the government, including the cops, including everybody. You know what I'm saying? We can't just say, oh, the public can no longer own guns. And this is exactly what Manny brought up, is the case in Mexico where it's like, okay, the public can't own guns anymore, but the government, the cops, and the cartels can. And it's a recipe for disaster. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to gun control, I think it's a debatable topic when it comes to universal gun control, and everybody has to give them up. But to say one group has to give them up and not another, that to me is a recipe for disaster. Claire?
It absolutely is. And that's kind of my thought on gun control. I am very pro-gun right now because the cops obviously have guns and use them indiscriminately, and the government obviously has weapons they use indiscriminately. There is no reason why the citizenry should not be armed at this point, because you just never know what's going to happen. And if you take away our only self-defense at this point, who knows what's going to happen? I just don't think that there's a reason to have gun control at this point. You know, I'm pro-gun now, but if we could actually disarm the governments and the cops and everything else, then I would be very much against weapons that are only meant to kill, you know, basically people. Because, yes, you hunt with weapons, but, you know, there's no reason we couldn't hunt with bow and arrow or something else. I mean, this
spear.
I'm
a proponent of spears.
So I have a question. So before we get to DB real quick, so Claire, so do you think, someone with a clear track record of mental illness who has committed crimes in the past, do you think that person should be allowed to own an assault rifle that is not used for hunting?
I believe that guns should be... See, my position, first of all, is that I have a very hard time with being lorded over by a government that I don't agree with. So technically speaking, yes, I believe anybody should be able to own a weapon. But at the same time, like I said, that is only dependent on the fact that basically governmental bodies have weapons right now. So, right. You know, yeah, I feel like everybody should be able to defend themselves against everybody else while it's in this crazy state of violence that we're living in right now.
Yeah, it's a very that's it's one of the sticking points, because I definitely know some people that should not own weapons. Well, I know some people in my personal life that if they had a gun, I'd be not being able to sleep at night. And so, you know, there definitely something has to be done to make sure irresponsible people or people that aren't capable of controlling themselves,
like the government,
especially the cops.
Gun control. That's gun control, Nick.
Hey, Nick, but the question is now is who decides that? Because, I mean, I know some men that shouldn't be fathers, and I know some women that should never be mothers and stuff like that.
Where do we stop?
Yeah.
Exactly. And who decides, man? That's a big. Yes. You know, who's to say, oh, well, now, you know, if Trump comes to power, who's to say that he said, okay, well, I'm not in favor of gun control except for Muslims. Muslims can't own guns. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's something that could become a reality in the near future, man. And so that's a very slippery slope to put our foot down on. DB, what do you think, man?
Dude, I've done a lot of research on it. I was like Jake, too, before, where I was more liberal, more or less a liberal or a Democrat growing up. My parents were, they were against guns. We never had a gun in the house. I do own one now because I'm not trying to be a victim if somebody breaks in. And I think it's just, it's all going to go back to the root cause. Like Jake said, man, we need to fix the root cause. The root cause is that we are literally infected with a social cancer in the U.S. We have an economy that's faltering despite the fact that we're by far the wealthiest country ever on the face of the earth, and we allow it to happen, and it's done in many different phases. And once the guns are gone, they'll do whatever they want. They'll have carte blanche, and that's why it's such a big hot button issue. But we have to look at two test cases. We have to look at Australia. Australia took away their guns. They haven't had a mass shooting really since. They've had some mass stabbings and things like that, but there's a huge difference with Australia. They're not a breakaway colony of the crown. They're not enemy number one of the globalists, because that's really what the U.S. is. The U.S. is the enemy number one of the globalists. And if they can take us down, if they can infiltrate us, occupy us, and crush the Constitution, then we go on to the next phase, which is corporate tyrannism. And it's going to be backed by the gun. And so whenever people argue against the gun in the U.S., I just tell them there is no U.S. without the gun. We're founded by the gun. We'll die by the gun probably. And the only way to get around that is to make a fundamental change to every single system in the U.S. so that there's equality and fairness for people. Because, yeah, mental illness is part of it, but generally speaking, most crime is economic. These kind of things happening today with people with body armor, that's such a blatant fucking bullshit situation. People need to understand these guys were not, you know, the norm, not the normal crazy person that pops off. So I don't know what to do, man. There's other places that guns are legal and there's not an issue. Switzerland's a great example where everybody's mandated to get trained in guns. But again, they have the social security net there. And so does Australia. And people don't go crazy. People don't go broke from having a medical illness. People don't lose their homes. They don't get foreclosed on. They don't lose their jobs. I mean, it's not the same thing as here. We're a colony. People need to understand that. We are a colony, and the people that run the world hate us.
Interesting things you brought up there, man, and I think you're very much on. Most shootings in the U.S., look at Chicago. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people are gunned down in Chicago all the time. I mean, I lost count of how many it's been this year. It's probably over 500 at this point so far. Maybe it's probably a lot higher, actually. You'll see some weekends where it's like literally 30, 40 people gunned down in Chicago, not by a mass shooter, not by a terrorist, not by some right-wing extremist, just because it's so poor and so many gangs infested, so the drug war, and you know all this crap going on.
There's no-go zones. So people need to understand the parallel there. There's no-go zones in Chirac, and the cops don't even patrol. And there's no-go zones in parts of Europe now because of infiltration, things like that. And that's what it is, man. It's divisionary. You have pockets coming out. You have attacks coming from within. You have people scared, letting people do whatever they want to give them a false sense of security. The only real security is, it's really simple. Make sure the economy is strong so people that work hard are taken care of. Make sure they can protect themselves. Make sure cops are paid so well and maybe that they're so educated that they don't abuse their power. How hard would that be to do?
Well, you brought up a really good point with the being scared and the fear factor, because if you think about it, the way the government operates, they want the culture to be operating in an atmosphere of total fear and terror. And not only fear of, you know, the other, fear of the government, fear of this, fear of that, fear of like losing your home, fear of like not having enough money to eat, fear of this, fear of that. If we didn't have to operate in this entire just mood of fear, then there really wouldn't be any need for all this violence. It would just naturally flow that there wouldn't be so much violence.
Yeah, and you know, I want to bring the fact up because I made a status about this a couple months ago, and after the last mass shooting there was, I can't even remember which one it was because there's so many of them. And because I think most of these mass shootings are legitimate, you know, they're actually just people out there, whether for ideological reasons, whether they're mentally ill, or whether they're just brainwashed into fearing something and they're so scared that they lash out, or you know, whatever it is that causes these shootings. Because of course there probably are some that are fishy and that are, you know, orchestrated, but I think the majority of them are just people that are misled or whatever. We got to remember that we are the new Rome. You know, we are the sole remaining empire left in the in the entire world, and so our government has to take a lot of, you know, countermeasures to make sure the populace remains divided. Otherwise, we'd put an end to this empire and we'd say, hey, we're tired of you guys taking our money to go fight all these wars overseas to make Exxon and all these other corporations rich. So they have to divide us and make us all scared of our neighbors and make us think that we got to go shoot up Planned Parenthood, or make us think that we got to go shoot at Muslims, or to make Muslims think that they got to go shoot at white people, or to make, you know, cops think they got to shoot black people. I mean, the empire has to take these measures against the public in order to keep us divided enough so that they can continue the empire, so they can continue pulling the wool over our eyes, to continue enriching all these corporations while robbing us blind. The great saying I like to use is that it's socialism for the poor and it's capitalism for the rich. You know, they use our money, they tax us to go invade Iraq, and then Halliburton and Exxon and all these corporations privatize all the profits from it and get all the contracts and get all the oil and all that shit, you know. And this is why I think there's so much fear sowed into the American public by the media and by the politicians, is because they have to do that and keep us all divided. Otherwise, we'd put a stop to this shit. You know what I'm saying?
This is a fascist country, Nick, and I'm working on an article about why America is fascist. And just as a quick solution, I say police officers should be required to get PhDs in quantum mechanics, and someone should really
at least a BA, dude. I mean, come on.
At least a BA.
I talked to somebody from Australia, and they told me, you know why we were able to disarm? Because our cops have to go to uni, because they don't fucking shoot people. Right. And nobody feels unsafe because they know they're going to get taken care of no matter what. And the economy's strong and the minimum wage is $18 an hour and people have free health care. How freaking hard is it to do that?
Well, there is an inherent, like, inexplicable violent pathology in America. Michael Moore touched upon this in Bowling for Columbine when he really posed the question, why do we have so many more shootings here than in other countries? And the numbers have gone up since then. And I don't think there's a clear answer to it. It's this strange anomaly of why is America? I mean, I talked to my father about it, and he claims it's still part of this kind of almost unconscious manifest destiny, that we're constantly wanting to nomadically travel and conquer, and that we just can never be happy. And so it causes this anxiety.
Definitely. I agree with you. And that's also back to my status I made a few months ago. It comes from the fact that we're an inherently violent culture in America, man. Like, our solution to almost every problem is violence. It's like, oh, there's addiction in this country. Okay, let's just lock people up. That's a form of violence. There's terrorism that exists in the world. Okay, let's go invade countries. There's communism that exists in the world. Okay, let's go invade countries and like bomb them and blow them up. our solution, and it's kind of ingrained in American society from the time that we enter into, even before the time we enter into elementary school through the media, but then it's especially when we enter into schooling, this violent culture is kind of ingrained into us, and it very much is kind of this neo-manifest destiny type of ideology that it's like violence is the solution. And so therefore, people, when they run into problems in their lives and they're depressed and things aren't going their way, well, hell, shit, I'll go out shooting. You know what I mean? Or, you know, suicide by cop.
Part of it has to do with a lot. I deal with language all the time as a writer. It has to do with the language and the way that we frame things. There's, you know, the war on drugs, the war on terrorism, the war on this, the war on this, the fight, the battle. You know, just pick your issue. It's always taking some sort of belligerent tone. And if Good you point. Have that sort of setup for everything, then of course it's going to be a violent culture.
All right, well, you know, we're gonna have to wait and see what comes of this San Bernardino thing. I guess our thoughts are kind of out there on the table now at this point. You know, I'm pretty sure.
Nick, when you want to leave the country, you want to leave the country, I recommend anybody who wants to leave the country to go to Costa Rica. Very nice place. They don't have no army. They got rid of it. Those people are relaxed over there. Everything's under control over there.
Nick and I are going to start a commune in Antarctica, actually. That's the new plan.
I'd already considered Costa Rica myself. Right.
DB's kind of pulling towards Peru. What's up, DB?
Well, here's the thing, man. I love the sentiment of no army or no military, but honestly, man, that just if things really do go south, then there's no way to keep your borders secure. So having no military could be a bad thing in the near future here. But what's really important, man, and there's a lot of books about strategic relocation. The main thing you got to look for is a laid-back populace that's open to Americans, number one, because we're going to be enemy number one if shit pops off. You just need to understand that. Number two, can they grow food? Do they have fresh water? And number three, is there a freaking mountain range to get up high? Because you're not going to want to be low when things get bad and people are amphibiously assaulting the whole fucking world.
Yeah, man. And, you know, seeing all this fascism rising and stuff, and I had already kind of been hinging my decision on expatriating on the 2017 election, and whether if it was Hillary or Rubio being elected, I was kind of already kind of making contingency plans because I feel like those two candidates are the most likely to start up a major, major war. I don't want to definitely say it'd be World War III, but that's kind of what it's looking like. I've already been making contingency plans to get out of the country and kind of fight the battle from outside, and because I don't want to be wind up like the Jews did in Nazi Germany and wind up, you know, taking that fate. But I think a lot of people are starting to question this as a real possibility of trying to escape from the United States. And, you know, I've seen plenty of people making the insinuation that the walls that are being built on the border, or at least talking about being built, could eventually be used to hold people in when things get bad enough here. And that's definitely a possibility. I mean, we definitely saw that happen over with the Iron Curtain and, you know, the Berlin Wall and all that stuff. We know how that turned out. And it's kind of hilarious that Reagan, of course, a Republican, was kind of one of his most famous statements was talking about tearing down the USSR, tearing down that wall. Now the Republicans are the party of building walls, you know, and it's kind of ironic in that sense. I want to touch on one last thing here before we shift into Middle East geopolitics, because we don't have much time left. But one of the things that I think is troubling, and again, it does fuel my definite tendency to think about leaving the United States, is that, you know, you got Trump out there, which is kind of in many ways openly fascist, and in other ways, yeah, he does say the stuff that other people don't want to say. You know, Iraq and the oil, ISIS, and he talks about that kind of stuff. But at the same time, openly fascist when it comes to minorities and other people that aren't white and wanting to control them and surveil them and put them in databases and all that. Very openly fascist. On the final note here on this whole gun control thing, Black Friday saw a record number of guns being purchased. In October alone, there were 1.9 million background checks for gun purchases. So we're talking about a lot of guns being bought in the United States. You can't help but just assume that most of these guns are being bought by people that are leaning on the conservative side of the spectrum. And, you know, looking at the poll numbers, you can't help but assume that a lot of these people are Trump supporters and therefore are in one way or another supporting fascist ideals. And so what we're looking at here is a bunch of people that are open to the idea of fascism having a bunch of guns. You know, and that to me is a very scary prospect, being a minority myself and being a maybe what could be considered a dissident, an activist, a journalist. You know, these are, I fall under a lot of categories that could be targeted here eventually. Yeah, and so therefore, I'm kind of like very much serious about my thinking about leaving the country if things get bad enough. I really hope that they don't. But if they do, I definitely am thinking about that kind of thing. And so that's one of the things I just wanted to bring up here, is that like all these guns out there on the market that people are having, if the population is manipulated enough, it could backfire. You know what I'm saying? The amount of Americans owning guns, if they end up winding up supporting fascist ideas, that could be a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? And I had this interesting conversation earlier today about this talking point about how the guns are to resist tyranny and stuff. Well, you know, that argument is valid, but at the same time, it's like, dude, if you guys are resisting tyranny, you should have acted a long time ago. You know what I'm saying? So in some ways, it's kind of a hollow argument because the tyranny has been around for a long time. And many would argue it's been at least 100 years that the United States has been under the rule of banking corporations and foreign interests and things like that. And so I think that the time to stand against tyranny is long past due. So all these talk about gun rights and, oh, we got to stand, you know, against the socialist Obama and that kind of thing, very hollow coming from a lot of those people that especially now are supporting Trump, who talks like a lot of fascist things that go against everything the United States was supposedly supposed to stand for. We all know that we've kind of been misled in that direction. Anyway, that aside, major things going on in Syria, Turkey, Russia. I mean, Russia has thrown out some allegations that Turkey is directly funding ISIS via the oil trade. And it turns out, as an article that Claire is putting out tomorrow, it turns out there is actually a lot of credence to this accusation from Russia. It does seem like Turkey is buying a bunch of the oil from ISIS and therefore directly funding them. And it turns out, you know, and as we all know, Turkey is a part of NATO. They're a Western ally. The United States backs them in basically everything they do. Their last election was more or less, in my opinion, invalid because they took over the media outlets. They jailed oppositional political candidates. Claire, quickly, we only have a few minutes left. What can you quick rundown of what's going on?
So Turkey is, it looks like Turkey, as far as Turkey goes, Erdogan's son, Bilal Erdogan, owns this corporation that ships oil. And it's been kind of openly known that it ships ISIS oil. And there was kind of a buried article in a Turkish news outlet that said that this Turkish oil and perhaps some other goods and services that are unknown and unclear were shipped not only to Syria, to the Assad regime by Assad-controlled ports, but also to Russia. So Turkey is directly cooperating with the nation states that supposedly NATO is standing against, and also cooperating with ISIS, who supposedly we're supposed to be bombing, which of course everybody knows that we aren't exactly doing that.
Yeah, and so Turkey, it turns out that they're kind of playing all three sides of the equation here, not only just two sides. They're playing all three sides of it. They're playing the Assad regime, they're playing their own game, they're playing Russia, they're playing NATO. I mean, Turkey is just a huge bad actor in the region, and it's really horrible that they're part of NATO, because if they get dragged into some kind of conflict, especially following their shootdown of this Russian jet, we're also dragged into it. And this is exactly the kind of thing that started World War One, is these entangling alliances.
Exactly. And
the Ottoman Empire, those son of a bitches.
We've made the U.S. officials have made the distinction that Turkey is acting alone, even when it bombed the Russian jet, that it was, you know, Turkey acting as Turkey, not as a NATO force. But the fact remains that Turkey is a member of NATO, and therefore it is seen as a member of NATO, and we are in that alliance. So
General Wesley Clark, retired general, he's made some statements, especially in the early 2000s, regarding the plans of the neocons to overtake seven different countries in the Middle East, including Syria, Iran, Libya, which a lot of those countries have already fallen with, except for Syria and Iran. He made a statement just earlier this week, basically saying that ISIS serves the interest, and I direct quote here, ISIS is serving the interests of Turkey and Saudi Arabia. Of course, Saudi Arabia, another U.S. ally. And so, you know, this is very complicated. I suggest everyone just read into it. Keep an eye out for the article tomorrow on the anti-media. And back to how can we stop ISIS? Well, for one, stop supporting any of these supposed allies that are financing and funding them. Two, stop all this intervention, man. There's a great article in the anti-media, Get Rid of ISIS Using This One Weird Trick by one of the great writers, Dan Sanchez. I suggest everyone read that. Astrophysicists in Belgium disproved Turkey's claims about the Russian shootdown, as well as Russia's claims about the anti-media video, same place, same time, 5 days a week. Peace out.
Adios.